miss some Cap and Company? Your podcast is ready. Chicago's home for sports is on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
This is Cap and Company on ESPN 1000.
Welcome back to Cap and Company. Danny Zetterman in with Jesse Rogers for David Kaplan, who will be returning on Monday. We'd like to thank our production team, the powerful Christopher Bleck, the young and restless Tyler Aki. We want to thank Eduardo Perez for joining us today. And we welcome in Jeff Meller and the one and only Johnny the Good Kid. What's up, boys?
Gentlemen, it looks like the armchair nutritionist is branching out to radio host, I see. Look at that. He's got all these adjectives describing Black and Tyler. He's ready to go.
I've been working on that all day. I've been waiting for this moment where I could thank them and say goodbye since we started at 9 o'clock.
Good job, Danny. Good job.
Thanks, boys. I appreciate it. Jeff, let me ask you a question. You're not a Cubs fan, you're a Sox fan, but you are a baseball guy. A lot of the conversation Jesse and I have had today with the listeners and each other is about Anthony Rizzo and his sore lower back.
Mm-hmm.
If you were a Cubs fan or just a baseball guy, would this be something that concerns you or just a bump in the road?
Listen, we can also ask Yerk this. He can tell you better than anyone. Like, a back injury is probably one of the worst injuries you can have for the long-term health of your career, because it's something that... it's hard to fix. In fact, I don't know if it's fixable. You just need to manage and maintain the pain for the most part. And Rizzo has learned how to do that. But Yerk, I mean, I'm sure you can speak to this as a former athlete better than anyone. You know, a lower back injury is not something that generally gets better with age. All right. Maybe you can't comment on that for the moment here.
You're trying to figure out the devices here. So.
Listen here, kid. I'll tell you about a lower back injury. When I was with Brett Favre, he took some Vicodin.
No, this is why I can see the issue, even before the pandemic, with Anthony Rizzo and his current contract situation. You know, Theo and Jed locked him up to a deal that obviously took care of him. But at the same time, they knew that in all likelihood, as they were locking up his prime years throughout his 20s, that it was going to, you know, listen, if a good player performs the way Anthony Rizzo has done throughout his career, you can, Jesse, I mean, I have to imagine, you know, when you're as successful as somebody like Rizzo is throughout your career, you probably at certain points get a little bit perturbed when you look at your salary across the landscape of baseball. And, you know, he's not maybe a top five MVP candidate every year, but he's a perennial top 20 candidate in National League MVP voting. And so I have to imagine for someone like Rizzo, who wants to get paid one more last time, dealing with a lower back injury is, you know, it's an annoyance when your current contract situation is what it is.
But it's a small part of who he is. I mean, we're talking about in the moment here. If he recovers from this and has no issues the rest of this year and puts up prorated good numbers, we're not going to even be thinking about it. I mean, we only talk about it when it pops up, and it only pops up once a year, basically. You bring up top 20 MVP, it's exactly right. Going backwards from 2018, he was 17th, 13th, 4th, 4th, and 10th in MVP voting. Won the Gold Glove last year, won the Platinum Glove, is a I think three-time Gold Glove guy. So, I mean, I don't know what we're talking about here. Yes, 5 years ago, if he had a lower back thing, I'd be like, oh, boy, like everyone else, back injuries are dangerous. But this is 5 years running where it hasn't really affected his season other than missing a few games.
Jesse, back when we were at the winter meetings in San Diego, there was some bad blood. Not bad blood, but there was a rough patch between the Cubs and Anthony Rizzo because he thought he was going to get a long-term extension, and that just didn't happen. How are things between them now? Obviously, Rizzo's a team guy, and he's basically the face of this team. But do you know if behind the scenes there's some, you know, animosity towards them for not extending him this olive branch of a new contract before the pandemic?
Yeah, maybe animosity isn't the right word. But look, his agent sounded off to me. I wrote that story at the winter meetings. And so he wouldn't have done that without Rizzo okaying it, right? So, again, is animosity the right word? Probably not. That's a really strong, aggressive word. But are they thrilled with how the Cubs are treating him? Probably not. I mean, that's why he went public with it, right? So, yeah, there's something under the surface there. Rizzo was hoping they would take care of him. He was the leader. won the World Series, has continued to put up numbers, and they haven't yet taken care of him for a second contract. So sure, there's something under the surface. There's no doubt about it.
All right, let's bring in Yurko for real this time, who can speak to lower back injuries as a former professional athlete. Yurk, we were talking about it. Like I was just saying, when you're if you're the front office of the Cubs, I'm just saying, like, back injuries are something that don't generally get better with age. Now, you can maybe manage them, but at the same time, if I'm locking up a guy for, you know, 4 or 5 plus years at large money, I want as clean a bill of health as humanly possible. And I can see why someone like a team like the Cubs might be a little reluctant to lock up Anthony Rizzo to a long-term deal.
Well, I don't even know if it's that they're reluctant to do it. He's got 2 years remaining on a contract.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one that signed it.
Yeah, that's the reason.
I mean, two option years.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the reason.
The Cubs don't have to do a damn thing. He's going to be a Cub through 2021. If they want to take a look at it next year, depending upon what the economic status here, post-COVID, and they want to address something with Anthony Rizzo when he turns, in his 31 age year, then they'll address it with him during that season or maybe before that season. What would the Cubs be in a hurry for? But Anthony Rizzo wants it done. He believes he deserves something. He's getting paid $33 million over the next 2 years.
Yeah, Jeff, we're not talking about a player that is up against the clock in terms of signing. So there's going to be another body of evidence to use for or against his cause when it comes to his back. My point being, if he recovers from this, plays 60 games, now he has another season where he could say, look, it was a small thing. How can you pin this on me? If he misses half the season because of it, that will tell us the answer is, you know, give us information on that as well. So I don't think the Cubs need to even evaluate this thing until they need to evaluate his contract.
Well, no, that's a fair point. And I'm not saying by any means do I think that, like you said, look, before they even broach the topic of signing Anthony Rizzo, they have Javier Baez and Chris Bryant who are up on the, you know, up above them in terms of, you know, on the pecking order that need to be, adjusted or addressed before they even get to Rizzo. And that's obviously for Cubs fans, I think, a bigger issue. Not so much whether or not, you know, how happy Anthony Rizzo is with his current deal. Because, yes, I completely agree with you. And knowing Theo and Jed's history, there's no reason for them to go ahead and make a deal, and there's no reason they will because they have no inclination of paying a player for past performance.
And let's not forget, I've brought this up before. I don't think people really think of, oh, he's a good player. That is a huge hole in your lineup. And then Schwarber and Rizzo, if either one of them were to leave for whatever reason, left-handed power at Wrigley Field. Those hitters don't grow on trees. It is not easy to hit 30 home runs at Wrigley Field as a left-hander. That crosswind, the wind blowing in, it's not easy. Hitting it out to left field is much – there's an alley there, left center, that the ball flies much better than to right field. So my point is this. Let's say after this year, he has another option year, they don't pick it up. Who the hell is playing first base for the Chicago Cubs as soon as 2021, if not Anthony Rizzo? So let's not downplay how important he is now and in the near future.
Yeah, but well, there's like –
But first base isn't what first base once was. Buster only just had a whole long story on ESPN.com. I'm sure you read it, Jess, that many teams go away from having the everyday first baseman. And by default, because of that, Anthony Rizzo's the third best first baseman in the league. Now he's probably the second because Freddie Freeman's not playing. But the point of the matter is the Cubs could make do without an everyday first baseman. You go away from that. You know, Kyle Schwarber wants to play every day. Could he not learn to play first base? Like Jeff brought up the pecking order. If you're Theo and Jed, both Kyle Schwarber and Anthony Rizzo's deals are up after 2021. Which guy is more important for you to work out a deal with right now?
Well, Schwarber's younger and has that 40 home run thing. So, I mean, Schwarber probably, to be honest. I'm just telling you, don't downplay left-handed power. It is essential in baseball on any team. And you can't just have Schwarber on the team. You've got to have a second left-handed power hitter because we know that Hayward's not really considered that. So that I'm just saying there's value in Rizzo that you don't think about, even at 31 years old, even with the back. Okay, you don't want an everyday first baseman. I don't care. Whoever is playing there, multiple people, they still need to produce. And Rizzo is more likely to do it than a combination of guys. And I don't know who those guys are unless you do move Schwarber over there. But then you still have a hole there at left-handed power.
Jesse made me laugh a little bit. He said it's not easy to hit 30 home runs at Wrigley Field. You're right. That's why the last 2 years Anthony Rizzo hasn't hit 30 home runs. He's hit 27 and 25. In the years that the ball was jumping out of parks all over Major League Baseball, all of a sudden his power numbers declined. So that's interesting, too.
A little bit. You're right. Before that, he was a solid 30 home run hitter. It did drop.
That's the perfect prism to put it in, though, as Yurko points out. Like, you can look at Anthony Rizzo's stats and just go, man, is he consistent? He's Mr., 32, 100 RBIs, And like Yurko said, though, the obviously he was injured last year, so that probably prevented him from getting to...
He's still at 27.
I know, but I'm saying that's why it prevented him from getting to 30.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when Yurko just said they were playing with the juiced baseball that nobody can deny at this point last year. And so a 30 home run season last year really isn't the norm of what a 30 home run season was the years prior. So that is a fair criticism as well. And don't think that Jed and Theo are not acutely aware of that. I do think they probably, when they're in the Cubs front office behind closed doors, I truly think the way they are cold-hearted assassins about trying to get value from every player, I can imagine them saying to themselves, like you said, Jess, there's no rush. They're going to wait for his option year, and they're going to see. And he needs to come out and play well, because if he doesn't, I could easily see, not that either party wants to leave, just like I don't think Chris Bryant wants to leave. He's made it abundantly clear he wants to be in Chicago for the long haul. But the reality is that whatever financial constraints that Jed and Theo are operating under,
biblical losses,
yes, are real with Tom Ricketts running the team. And so they have to ask themselves, whatever Chris Bryant wants, whatever the amount of money it is to get that deal done, is it going to work with the Cubs, within the Cubs budget, knowing that other teams around baseball may want to make Chris Bryant the face of their franchise as well, and might be willing to pay more than the Cubs are?
Well, this team needs to restock the cupboard. They really do, because I don't. What's behind Rizzo right now? If they didn't pick up the option for next year, what's behind Lester?
We all agree they'll pick up the option. Like, it would, something crazy have to happen for them not to pick up next year's option. Well,
that's what's behind. John Lester gets released, you got money to buy another player. That's what happens when John Lester goes bye bye.
Maybe Mookie Betts will be a Cub.
Anthony Rizzo most likely will be a guy on July 31st of 2021 who ends up getting traded away. In my crystal ball, that's what I see. If you got to restock and you got to get something, the Cubs may be in it. They may not be in it. Either way, next year, as you look forward, he could be a 2021 trade individual going to a different team. You might as well get something for him. I don't think they're going to agree on a contract. He's not going to get the type of numbers that Bryce Harper got. You're not going to pay him $28 million. How much of an increase are you going to give him from $16.5 million?
Yeah, I mean, I think he'd like to get to 20. I think he'd like to get closer to Paul Goldschmidt type.
We don't like to get to 20.
Yeah. Well, I'm just giving you an example. Mm-hmm. Paul Goldschmidt type numbers.
Yeah, and but here's the thing. You have to, Goldschmidt, I understand that. Obviously, he's a guy who's a comp. Of course, Goldschmidt's peak years were better than anything Anthony Rizzo delivered, and that's part of why he was able to get the contract from the Cardinals that he did. And don't think that the Cardinals probably don't look at that contract every day now after the season that Goldschmidt had last year and probably regret it, especially with the with what's happening across baseball. I'm curious to see what kind of big money deals are out there, not just in this free agency after baseball season and when we get to December, but the following year. I mean,
I think that the Cubs are going to offer Rizzo a sort of team friendly deal, but pay him for what he's been and everything. But Rizzo's going to have to make a tough decision. That's what I think is going to happen. They're going to say, hey, we want you to be here for a couple, three more years. Finish this thing out as a Cub. You've been our leader. We're going to give you a decent contract, but we're not going to give you the max. That's my guess. And then he's going to have a tough decision to make.
All right, gentlemen. Jesse and I will get out of your way. What do you have coming up on the big program?
Well, Yurko and I are going to be talking about college football and all the changes in the schedule that conferences are trying to accommodate for right now. We'll hear from Ohio State Athletic Director Gene Smith, not as optimistic as he once was. We will talk with Chuck Garfine about the White Sox at 1 o'clock. And, of course, we've got lots of football lists that I need to bounce off of Yurko, so we'll be doing that today.
All right, boys, we'll have a good weekend. Have a great show. We'll be listening.
Danny, good talking to you, pal.
Jess, you're the best, brother.
You too. Talk to you soon. See you guys.
See what Carmen and Yurko are talking about on Twitch.
Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago today.
This is Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Is college football as we know it about to change as a result of coronavirus? I'm Jeff Meller in for Carmen today on Carmen and Yurko, along with the good kid. Yurk, I have to ask you, as the show wrapped up yesterday, we got the breaking news that it was looking like the Big Ten was likely to change their schedule to conference-only games this fall. And honestly, if you've been following what's going on across sports, that seemed like it was only a matter of time. And so we got the word from the Big Ten that that was going to be in play. We asked at that point then, how does that affect a team like Notre Dame, who obviously is independent and doesn't have a conference that they can play all of their games inside of? And also, we have seen now, too, that the ACC followed suit. It seems like college football, if only the Power Five conferences can play, then what we know of not just college football, but college athletics can be changed going forward.
Change, but is it for the better? That's what I wonder.
That's a great question. Great question.
Change for the sake of change isn't always good. And it'll be interesting to see what the fallout is and the damage from all of this is as you move forward. I think it's hard to make predictions.
Mm-hmm.
I think people are going to have to go through this and see kind of how it is, what it is, whether, people, enjoy it the way it is. But, I don't mind the Ivy League disappearing, but Mid-American Conference football is pretty good. And you've seen a lot of players come out of there and play in the NFL.
Sure.
It's solid football. And, I like it when they match up, your smaller Division I teams matching up. Boise State, you'd never had a Boise State if it weren't allowed to play in those games, those cross games.
Of course. Who is not better for having the blue turf part of their life? Once you became familiar with the fact that there's a Boise State and that they have a blue turf field, I mean, my life was enriched just because of that alone.
Do you guys know how many birds died flying into that thinking
plenty.
It was water?
Yeah.
Do you have an exact number, Mark?
I don't, but I remember watching a game one time they said there was a lot of birds that fly into that field thinking it's water.
Well, I played on the Smurf turf back when there were a 1AA program.
Ooh, and I did not know this, Yerk.
One of Bobby Hull's sons was a wide receiver on the team.
Not Brett.
So we were out. No, not Brett. Brett was playing hockey. It's okay. One of the youngest.
Just checking. Just checking.
Yeah. Well, either way, it's one of the youngest sons. And we played out there. It was 1988, in the fall of 88, if I'm not mistaken. We went out there. They ended up beating us like 10-7. It was a low-scoring game. It was in a little bit of a mist. But the sign that was the funniest was we walked out there and it says, please don't spit chewing tobacco on the field. And that was it. No dip. Don't dip. No chewing tobacco. Don't spit on the blue turf. So we went out and practiced. We had a nice game out there. So the Smurf turf I'm very familiar with. Now, I'm sure they've upgraded it and they've done it. But the story of birds dying because it looks like a lake is very real. And a lot of those birds, seagulls and ducks.
But yeah, so that's the point, though. A program like Boise State, which we've all become, if you're a college football fan now, you think of Boise State, and, they're not a traditional power by any means, but before we had the current iteration of college football playoffs that we have, Boise State was always an intriguing team because a lot of the power conferences didn't really want to get matched up with them in a bowl game because they knew that they were at least a formidable opponent. And at worst, if Boise State could deliver a win in a bowl game, it was a huge blow for a Power Five conference to take a loss to Boise State in a bowl game.
And it happened.
It did. Exactly.
It happened down in the Orange Bowl, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
We had the famous proposal after that game.
After the touchdown and a trick play, I believe. Yeah. So you had it. So it did happen. It actually came to fruition, which is why the current state of what you have now is they can avoid, having them in the top 10 or the top 8 or whatever they're going to do.
Yeah.
So they put this together so they can get the Boise States out. They can get the Utahs out. you know, the Brigham Young's out. They can keep teams out so they can just have a Pac-10 team, an SEC team, Big Ten team, an ACC team, so they can have their conferences, Big 12. They can have their conferences represented. That way they can get the dash for the cash. That's why this system is built the way it is, to keep out the small teams. Who is it, TCU? Was it Texas Christian that couldn't get in?
The Horned Frogs.
Yeah, of course, yes, Kansas State. Didn't Kansas State get screwed a number of different times? That's why this is the way it is, so that, you know, they can control exactly who plays when.
Sure, and I mean, obviously, at this point, you know, it's just masquerading, college football just masquerading as a amateur sport. We all know that it's actually a minor league for professional football, but the reality is that if only the Power Five conferences can play this year, I do wonder, as we just laid out, like what happens to programs like Boise State, mid-majors, if they cannot play a season of college football, what will the fallout be around the country? Because you have to imagine conferences will never look the same. There will probably be quite a few collegiate football programs that if they cannot actually have a season this year, even if it's in the spring like the Ivy League, you have to wonder if their programs will ever be brought back.
Oh, no, I still think that I think 95% of the programs end up surviving this fall.
Okay.
You have to remember there really are no expenses except for your coaching staff at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got to pay your coaching staff. Your kids are on scholarship. That's part of the university program, the way they do things. Those scholarships, believe it or not, are still good for the 4 or 5 years that you've made the commitment to the program. You sign them yearly. Every year you sign your scholarship. But once it's been offered to you, they can't take it away unless you do something crazy or egregious where you get kicked out of the university. So, you know, there's still the commitment to the individuals. Like, if I'm a freshman, I'm going in this year. There's no college football. They can't come back next year and say, hey, your scholarship's been rescinded. Now, you might want to transfer if you wanted to play football and go someplace else. But say that, hey, football's not that important to me, but an education is. You can stay, get your education. You still have that scholarship as you move forward. So,
he's Yurko. I'm Jeff Meller in for Carmen today on Carmen and Yurko. And in case you missed it, Gene Smith, the athletic director of Ohio State, who is actually somebody who has been fairly optimistic, you know, in recent months about actually having fans in attendance. Now, this was obviously prior to some of the larger spikes in cases across the country. Gene Smith initially thought there'd be close to 50% of fans in the stands for Ohio State games. That was back in, I believe, late May. Yesterday, Gene Smith, not nearly as optimistic.
I am very concerned. I think in our last conversation, I was, you know, cautiously optimistic. You know, I'm not even there now. So I am concerned that we may not be able to play, which is why we took the measure that we took in order to try and have September available to us for conference games and give us the flexibility and control to handle disruptions if we're able to start a season. We just didn't respond to our opportunities that were provided to us. People need to follow the protocols and give our kids a chance to compete.
I think that's the real question is, now that you've gone to conference-only schedule, can they actually pull that off, Yurk?
I think they can pull it off.
Okay.
Whether you can get the crowd or not the crowd, I think it's just kind of a side issue on whether you can get the crowd or not. Either you're going to have them or you're not. If you choose not to have them, now the challenge is to replicate what other teams and other leagues are doing. How do you do that in the system that you have and that's in place? Are you putting out the small fires? Is there a number of COVID cases that would force you to shut it down? What is that? You know, can you handle, you know, your business in that regard if you're going to run a football program? You know, it's a physical sport. At some point, you guys are going to have to contact each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they always say there's spit flying everywhere. Well, guess what? You play football, there's spit flying. There's fluids all over the place. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, you can't play football from a socially distanced space.
No. That's close contact.
That's not going to work.
No, I agree.
All right, so also, Yurko was pretty bothered when he was looking over the Ohio State pledge that they're asking their players to sign.
The Buckeye pledge.
Yes.
Yeah, the Buckeye pledge.
The Buckeye pledge. We will tackle that next.
It's Carmen and Yurko. Follow us on the gram at Carmen and Yurko and at ESPN _ Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
college football be changed based on COVID and all the adjustments that are being made by college football? I'm Jeff Meller in for Carmen today on Carmen and Yurko, along with Yurko. And Yurko, you were a little perturbed when we talked about the Buckeye pledge that they're asking all of their collegiate athletes to take when we were speaking earlier today.
Well, I just don't understand it. You know, the player is there. He signed a scholarship. He's committed to the program. Everybody know what the challenges of COVID are. You end up catching COVID. It may be nothing that you've done. Nothing that you have personally done. And all of a sudden you find yourself in a situation where you've got COVID. Mm-hmm. It's a virus that's out there. And they're asking these guys to make this commitment to do this. And you go down the line and it's like, well, I mean, a lot of it's common sense stuff. You keep it clean. You keep this here. You make a commitment to wash your hands. You're going to wear a mask in public. This. And then in the bottom paragraph, it says, you know, if we deem that that you've done something that, you know, we can, in essence, terminate you as a player at the collegiate level.
Yes.
And I maybe I'm reading it more harsher than they intend it to be.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was a college football player, I'd go to the my captains and say, take this and tell them to rot. We agree with all of it except for that. We're not going to sign anything. We've already signed a scholarship. We already know what this is all about. We already know what we've got to do as a team. That's it. There's an understanding. You have it. We've made a commitment to you. Blah, blah, blah. Why does anybody got to put a signature on paper for?
No, it's a fair.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
It's a fair point. Like, and I know Ohio State, when this initially came out, tried to curb it as we just want to make sure that our players are taking this seriously.
Yeah.
But at this point, if you can't understand that this is as serious as it gets, you know, this is, you know, and in all reality, the craziest time that most people have ever lived through, because most people out there, most people in our listening audience, Yurk, were not alive for the 1918 Spanish flu. So because that is the case, a lot of people are dealing with this for the first, you know, the realities of what COVID are. And if you can't understand that that's serious enough based on its own, I agree with you. I don't see why signing a piece of paper would make me take this any more serious than I already am taking it. You know, like having a, I'm sure plenty of, you know, whenever the, you know, when most, I have to imagine that when most colleges and teams were brought back in to their campus, to their practice facilities, that they were, I would hope, addressed by some person who can speak with authority on just how serious it is. You like, and that in itself should be more than enough for your players to understand the great undertaking that college football is trying to pull off here.
If I'm the head coach of Ohio State, or if I am Gene Smith, the athletic director, I simply say Major League Soccer has kicked two teams out.
Yeah.
Okay? Dallas is gone. Nashville is gone. Gentlemen, if you don't take this thing seriously, we're going to get kicked out of competing for the Big Ten championship this year because we haven't taken it seriously. And that is all you need to say. Nobody needs to sign anything. That what they're doing in the MLS, players aren't taking it seriously. Guys are out and about doing whatever they want. Yeah, you're disinvited. You can't participate in this year's activities. And do that for Ohio State. You can't participate in this year's football activities because you guys did not take it seriously. So thank you. Enjoy the spring. Hopefully there'll be a vaccine at that point, but have a good time. Now, I'd rather do something like that than, I'm sure those guys in Dallas probably had to sign something. It didn't mean a thing. Just tell the kids up front, we're going to get booted from this whole damn thing if we don't take this seriously. Here's the rules. Let's move forward.
312-332-3776. If you'd like to tell us how you feel about the upcoming college football season being reduced to conference-only games. Merkin, I'm curious as to your thoughts, because around the station, you probably have the biggest allegiance. I know Abdallah loves his Alabama Roll Tide, but you went to Wisconsin. You are a Badger through and through, and they had one of the biggest games on the college football slate out of conference this year, as they were set to host Notre Dame at Lambeau Field, I believe. What were your thoughts yesterday when you heard that Big Ten football is planning on playing interconference games only?
First of all, I'm not surprised by that at all. And before we get to that, Abdallah, you know, listen, I mean, he's an Alabama fan, but he did suffer, okay, with Alabama. Like, Badger fans suffered through some really grim, bad seasons. I mean, my when I was a freshman at Wisconsin, I got picked up, you know, they do this thing called over. I was a small freshman, and I'm sitting there at a game. You know, what do? Your freshman year, you go to a game, and they're playing some bad team, and they're losing, and they start this thing called over, and all of a sudden, I'm being picked up and pushed to the top of the stadium. Okay, mm-hmm. Freaking out. So that was no fun. But
they stopped short.
They did stop short. Yurko, but they pushed me. I was screaming all the way to the top of the stadium.
I wish they had chucked you right over the top.
Yeah. I wish you probably do, but you know, I think I was really disappointed because I was really looking forward to playing Notre Dame. Now that Wisconsin's really good at football and Notre Dame is really good at football, I would have loved to have seen that matchup, and especially at Lambeau Field. Wisconsin, I want to say a couple of years ago, played LSU at Lambeau Field and shocked the world. And LSU, I think, was number 4 in the country at that time, and they beat them. So, listen, I think if they can pull off a conference season, I'd love it. But I still have skepticism they're going to be able to pull that off. But I'm just disappointed because not only are we losing a lot of great games, I think we're losing a lot of the bowl games, which I love the bowl games. At the end of the year, I know a lot of people hate them, but it gives a team a great chance to end their season with a win. And people who like to gamble also love gambling, you know, betting, love the bowl games. But yeah, when I heard it first, I was disappointed that Wisconsin was not going to be up at Lambeau Field to play Notre Dame. I think that would have been picturesque and would have been an awesome game.
That's an interesting question to me. Are you going to miss bowl games this year in the what seems likely event that they are canceled this year? Now, I know you're still not necessarily – you think there's still a better chance that bowl games might happen?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. And it depends how this whole thing plays out, who ends up playing, who ends up not playing. You know, I think you'll see the usual suspects in the top 10. I think you'll see the usual suspects going to the national championship series. I think that's going to happen. I don't think every bowl game gets played, but maybe 10 bowl game gets played. Nobody cares about the Poulin Wean Eater Bowl, okay?
No.
Nobody cares about what they do in Detroit.
The Motor City, probably
Madden,
not happening.
Whatever it is, doesn't make a difference to me. Those bowl games will go by the wayside. I'd say it'd be Gator Bowl and up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
From the Gator Bowl as your cutoff, and you're going forward up to the top. Gator Bowl and up, everybody will understand. Nobody will have a problem with it. We'll have a handful of games. Go ahead and recognize some of the top teams in each of the conferences. Then you've got your bowl championship series, and it should be a little bit of fun. And that's if things go well.
Yeah.
If things go well.
For me, the bowl season had, you know, I don't know if it was a decade ago, if it was 15 years now at this point, when bowl games got shifted and it was no longer the vast majority of everything being played on New Year's Day. Once they got shifted and moved around and everything's now, you know, prior to, you know, before Christmas, the week before Christmas, you know, it's bowl season because ESPN's going to give you the little jingle that it's the most wonderful time of the year. And then you move on and you know that you're, like you said, you're the Gasparilla Bowl or whatever the hell's going on. For me, it started to lose its luster. And at that point, the only reason I really keep any type of tabs is because the bowl pool that I'm going to enter needs me to submit a number for these ancillary bowls that I have no idea what they're going to be called this year. But for me, at some point within the last 15 years, they completely lost meaning to me once they were no longer taking place on January 1st.
No, I understand that. The Orange Bowl, the Rose Bowl,
yeah.
The Cotton Bowl,
of course.
Sugar Bowl, they all used to have their time. And the Fiesta Bowl was the wild card that would try to go ahead and nip at the heels of everybody, trying to become one of the big boys. And in 88, when they got Notre Dame at West Virginia, and it was 1-2 national championship game theory, that's when the Fiesta Bowl became one of the big ones out there. But yeah, once they left January 1st, once the tradition was just, you know, pooped on basically by the NCAA and the big corporations and everything, then yeah, of course it was. That's when you knew it was about money. And it's always been about money. And the NCAA doesn't give a rat's patootie about student athletes. They do not care. What they care about is getting every dollar out of that wet sponge that they possibly can until they wring it dry. They get the thing all chafy and terrible. They throw the sponge out and they go looking for new sponges that they can wring dry again.
You know what I was going to say, though, guys? Talking about if the season doesn't happen, Yerk, What is Clemson going to do? Trevor Lawrence will be done, right? He'll have. Does this count as a season?
Of course it does.
Right. So then he can go pro.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, he'll be
three
ready.
Years that
I mean, there's no reason for him to play after this year, right? He's got to go pro.
Of course. Yes. Well, he's going pro.
And the other question is, so that leads us to how will, and listen, I'm not going to feel bad for NFL general managers by any means, but the reality is their job gets a lot more difficult if they actually cannot evaluate players based on a season that occurs this year. And if for whatever reason, the Power Five college programs have to follow suit with what the Ivy League has done and, you know, looking at potentially playing their football season in the spring, if the Power Five had to follow suit, because we all know, as Yurko just said, the money that college football brings in funds so many other sports across collegiate sports across the country that they need the money in order to maintain what they've built up. The question is, if it's a spring football season, if you're Trevor Lawrence, I don't know, is that something that interests you? If you're a big time college, you know, NFL prospect,
No, they don't want to participate in the combine. You got a handful of guys that don't even want to play in bowl games anymore.
Of course.
They play their season. They opt out of their bowl game. They go and train out in Arizona or down in Florida. They get themselves ready for the combine, if they're going to do anything during the combine at all. Guy like Trevor Lawrence, all he's going to do is throw.
Yep.
That's it. No 40. You're not going to see it. There's no weights, no jumps. He'll go through his medical stuff. He'll shake hands with everybody. He'll do his interviews, and he'll say, boys, I'll see you on the day of the draft. And it's only really going to be one team. Whoever the worst team in the league is, they're going to get a chance to get him, and possibly he becomes a franchise quarterback for you.
He's Yurko. I'm Jeff Meller in for Carmen DeFalco today on Carmen and Yurko. And I'm told, Yurk, that today is an all-time great Cubs birthday. Merkin will tell us who it is next.
We've all heard the rumors, but Fight Island is finally here. This weekend's UFC 251 is set to be the best yet, with big names stepping into the octagon all night. This week only, DraftKings is offering all new users a special odds boost on this weekend's headline fight. Bet 20 to win 100 on either fighter. From golf to European soccer and all the way to Abu Dhabi, for Fight Island and DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered this week. For the big fight this weekend, DraftKings is offering all users not one but two profit boosts when you place a bet on UFC 251. Just place a pre-match bet on a fighter, and if they win, your payout increases. That's right. DraftKings Sportsbook is offering their best sign-up offer to date. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code WMVP when you sign up. For a limited time, new users can get a no-brainer odds boost on the headline fight this Saturday. Bet 20 and you win 100. Yep, that's right. No matter if you pick Usman or Masvidal, your odds will boost from $20 to $100. So head to DraftKings Sportsbook now and sign up with the code WMVP. You must be 21 or older, Indiana only. Bonus comprised of a first deposit bonus and first bet match, each up to $500. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-9-WITH-IT.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
You miss something, the podcast is out there. The all-new ESPN Chicago app is here. Get it now. Get it in the App Store and Google Play.
On this date, some 66 years ago, a Cubs legend, a man near and dear to Randy Merkin's heart, was born. Yurko, any guesses as to which legend turned 66 today?
66 today, Randy Hundley.
Ooh, I think he's a little older than that, though, right?
No, is Hondo a little bit older than that?
I don't know for sure, but he's...
All right, 66. I'm 52. That means he played in the early 70s.
A little later than that.
Yeah, 66 today. Is it Rick Monday?
You're still a little early in terms of your era.
He's Randy Hundley's 78, by the way.
Okay, is it George Mittelwald?
It is not a
Mickey Kelleher.
No,
Tarzan Joe Wallace.
Let's go a little later, Yurk. You're a little early there.
Okay,
a little bit later in your life.
Early 80s, Rick Sutcliffe.
Ooh, the Red Baron is not 66. It's not him. Good guess, but you're on the same wavelength there.
How about Dick Ruthven?
No, no.
How about Oscar Zamora?
This guy was a legendary Cub. You're
legendary. Bill Madlock.
No.
All right. That's all,
that's all he's got. All right. For you. All right. Merkin, would you like to unveil which Cubs legend turned 66 today?
Today, top five, my favorite Cubs. Andre Dawson turns 66 today.
Hi, it's Andre Dawson.
That's
including
it?
Myself, Ed Belfour.
Not Ed Belfour.
So, Yurk, I don't know if you remember this. It was, I think, two or three months ago, a friend of mine and I always had an argument in college that Andre Dawson was not the MVP. He said Andre Dawson deserved the MVP in 87. I said he did. A friend of mine went on Cameo and sent Andre Dawson this message and had him read it. And, Jeff, you have it right there we can play?
I do indeed. Andre Dawson.
This is Andre Dawson.
Hi, this is the Hawk, Andre Dawson. And I'd just like to send a shout-out to Randy Zoff, Zinni, and Adam, and say thank you very much, as I understand. You're all big Cubs fan, and I was one of your favorite Cubs. Well, thank you for your loyalty and your allegiance to the Northsiders. At the request of Eric, sorry, Eric, I can't honor your request. He wanted me to agree that Ozzie Smith should have been named National League MVP in 87. Well, actually, I thought Eric Davis and Jack Clark had better years than Ozzie did. Just saying. And besides the fact that I destroyed the Cardinals that year, that was a no-brainer. Listen, you guys stay safe. Take care of yourself. All the best until baseball itself returns. Continue to fly the W. And go Cubs, go. God bless you.
So that was the Hawk. That was a couple months ago.
Still a ball of energy at 66 years old there.
What'd that cost? What'd that cost?
I don't remember.
Wow.
Before we get back to some more birthdays, a couple other things trending today. So Jack Swarbrick talked to Heather Dinich. Jack Swarbrick is the athletic director for Notre Dame. And he is now under the belief that it's less likely that the college football season will start on time. Which is no surprise to anyone, right? That the college football season will not start on time.
Listen, the one thing the one thing I'll ask is, like, where are they pushing it back to? Because we've seen that a lot of colleges across the country want to be off of campus by, you know, winter break. There's been discussions that it's going to be an extended winter break because of a fear of a flu season in combination with coronavirus, that kids on campus in November and December is not ideal. So when they say it's unlikely that it'll start on time, it just leads me to the question, where are you pushing it back to? The spring? Or you know what I'm saying? It doesn't jive to me that you would push the start of college football season back, but then still be off of campus, you know, by Thanksgiving.
You know, you're still 2 months away from the start of the college football season.
Yep.
A lot of things can happen in 2 months. So I'd say be patient, keep your schedule where it is with a flexibility to maybe be able to move it back a week or two.
Yeah, there's
as you move forward. And if you're only playing 8 to 10 games, naturally it's going to be a little bit shorter than it normally is anyway.
Yeah, you wonder if especially if you're, intra-conference here, a lot, you know, I wonder the occasional bye week that will come in the college football season. Like, will those, do you need any
disappear.
Bye weeks? Yeah. Like, you're no longer worrying about, you know, scheduling conflicts and with smaller school teams because that's out the window. So, yeah, that's a fair point, Yurk. Will you just go 8-9 weeks straight of conference games, be done in just over 2 months? That's, I suppose, that's a possibility.
Yes.
There's no reason.
Yes.
Yeah, and there's no reason to knee jerk and cancel games right now because before you know what you're dealing with in a month from now. What else we got, Merk?
All right. So this story's been going on for quite some time with Zion Williamson and potentially did his stepfather take benefits? The new report is his stepfather took benefits of $400,000, solicited and accepted over $400,000 payment from a marketing agent in October of 2018. And of course, Zion Williamson's camp is saying it's all wrong, obviously fraudulent, and the signatures were forged, and everything else is inauthentic.
Took it through who?
Well,
a marketing agent that was representing.
It says. Williamson's stepfather solicited and accepted a $400,000 payment from a marketing agent in October 2018 before his only season at Duke. according to a court motion and sworn affidavit filed by his former marketing representation attorneys in federal court on Thursday. Gina Ford's attorneys say the affidavit and other exhibits show that Williamson was ineligible when he played for the Blue Devils because his stepfather received impermissible benefits from Slavoj Duric, a Canadian marketing agent. So, and then Zion Williamson's attorney, Jeffrey Klein, called the allegations and documents patently fraudulent.
All right, so right now we're in the old he said, she said.
Well, and I'm trying to make the connection. If his stepfather's doing something unscrupulous, how does, and he's doing it for his own benefit, not for the benefit of the athlete, then how does the athlete become guilty because his stepfather was doing
It says here, Klein claimed that a photocopy of Williamson's South Carolina driver's license included in the document and the letter of declaration were obviously fraudulent. He also claimed the signatures from Zion Williamson and Anderson on the document are inauthentic. So if Zion Williamson's signing off on it, I guess he knows about it then, right?
If the signatures are authentic.
Right, exactly. You know, yeah.
Things can be forged.
Absolutely,
so
absolutely.
There's a lot of nuance here,
yes.
And there's a lot of getting down to actual facts as opposed to just accusations.
Uh-huh.
So we'll see how this thing plays out then.
And yeah, but how? And that's the real question is ultimately what comes of this? I mean, they were bounced in the, was it the second round?
No, they were bounced in the Elite Eight. They lost to Michigan State.
So what are you going to do ultimately?
Yeah, like, well, there's nothing you're going to do.
You know,
yeah.
Are we going to strip away the Elite Eight appearance for Duke? Yeah. Okay.
The story becomes if this somehow came indirectly from the university, from Duke.
Exactly.
That's right. Where the story is. If it didn't come from Duke and it didn't come from Krzyzewski, then this is just them doing something, trying to line their pockets for future considerations.
Exactly.
For when Zion was going to be out of college and people are going to be able to represent him. Obviously, people want a little piece of that pie. They've seen what Michael Jordan has become. They've seen what LeBron James has become. And if you can just get 3 to 5% of that, you become a pretty wealthy individual.
Hell, I'd take one, Yerk.
Yeah.
Other birthdays today. She was a star on Modern Family. I loved her in the movie Four Brothers, but she was a star on Modern Family. She was married to Ed O'Neill. 48 today. Yerk, any ideas?
She's married to Ed O'Neill
on Modern Family.
Yes.
Oh, that's the blonde haired.
No, that's
that was his daughter. On
yeah,
Modern Family.
Sophia Vergara. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Sophia. Yes.
Many moons ago, I think she was one of the original reality shows. She at one point she was a singing star as well. She turns 40 today. She was married to Nick Lachey. I think the show was on E or MTV. I can't remember what it was. A reality show that they were together.
Yeah, I know. She's remarried now.
Yep.
She's
married
happy.
To a football player from the 49ers.
How much plastic surgery that poor woman has gone through. What is her name? Jessica Simpson.
And then a couple other sports birthdays today.
Also Tony Romo. She dated Tony Romo.
You're right. She did date Tony Romo.
I know. I remember that.
Great running back for the 49ers turned 60 today. One of the few that had 1,000 yards rushing and 1,000 yards receiving.
Roger Craig.
He is a great college football coach. He's won national championships in the SEC and the Big Ten. He turns 56 today.
Happy
birthday.
He's
won both.
Urban Meyer. SEC and Florida and Ohio State.
Does he work for ESPN though?
No, he doesn't work. He works for Fox.
Yes.
Oh, well, good for him.
Turning 32 today, arguably one of the top five wide receivers, but he's not playing in the NFL right now.
Terrell Owens.
Antonio Brown. I said 32 today.
Oh, okay. I thought you said 52.
No. And then this happened 21 years ago. We're not going to play the highlight, but it was probably the biggest moment in Women's World Cup history. Brandi Chastain, hits the game-winning goal, and then jubilation
takes her top off.
Takes her top off.
Right. I met her when I was with the Cleveland Browns in 1999. She was working for one of the big companies. She came out with myself and the field goal kicker at the time, Phil Dawson, and we taped a little piece for her. So it was kind of fun, kind of nice.
I assume based on the fact that Phil Dawson was there, I assume she was kicking some field goals?
We were kicking some field goals. We were having a little bit of fun. And she signed some soccer balls for my boys.
Her sister-in-law is the head coach at DePaul.
I did not know that.
DePaul soccer, I assume,
yes.
Correct?
Mm-hmm.
All right, just want to fill it in. All right, Yerk. Coming up next, Yoan Moncada is not with the White Sox yet. Could the team's best hitting prospect be poised to make some noise and cover third base? We'll talk to Chuck Garfine, that is, in just 2 minutes.